You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Jamie Noodles McLennan is not here today. Noodles is sick, but he's 100% locked.
No,
he'll be back tomorrow.
No.
I guarantee it. It doesn't matter what you want or what you think. He will be back tomorrow.
Dude, you can't go from where he's at to 100%.
You're coming back from Mexico. Are you worried that you're going to get sick?
No, I'm fine.
No, I know you feel fine now, but you're eating garbage and drinking constantly
in
the sun.
I'm like Rambo. I could eat things that would make a billy goat puke. Okay? There's nothing happening to me.
Never know.
That was a good drop, Grappler.
Let's hear that one again.
Never know.
It's like he's a ghost or something. Never know.
That's how he feels right now. You think there's a chance Noodles won't be back tomorrow?
Never know.
Is he on the can right now?
Never know.
Is he listening, dying to call in with a Garrett Sparks hot take?
Never know.
I know the answer to that one, because he's got it.
Yeah.
Like, this day was made for Noodles, and it'll carry over to tomorrow. The Leafs are in Nashville tomorrow night.
We'll maybe cold call them at 6:45 or something.
Yeah, I mean, by that point, you would think everything will be flushed out and everything will be out of the system for him.
I'm going to flush you, bastard.
That's what he's doing. Just gross.
It kind of feels like, I know you were away last week, but that was the theme of the week was players coming out and chopping themselves at the knees. Like, Matthews came out and said the team quit on Monday night in the third period against Tampa, which is a word you don't hear very often. Not in the hockey world, but it doesn't come up very often.
Well, I didn't hear this quote, but he didn't say they quit, did he? He said we quit?
Yeah, he said we quit in the third.
Oh. All right.
He included himself, but he's painting a them all with the same brush. You know, there are veterans probably in that team or young guys. Like, let's say you're Freddie the Goat. You're like, dude, don't try to claim I quit. I can't quit. If Babcock knows I quit, he'll ship me off to Siberia. I'll never see the NHL ever again. And that's the truth with Garrett Sparks. You know, I think it came from the right place. You know, I said in the 4 p.m. hour with him going off about them needing more emotion, and I think he was just reiterating what every Maple Leaf fan around the world was saying all week. But if you're a backup goalie that is holding on to an NHL job by a thread, Michael Hutchinson is sitting down there in the minors. He could come up and give up 6 in Ottawa. You got to be careful, and you got to be a little bit, I think, more cognizant of the messenger, that you are as a backup. Because
the circumstances around it. It's like going out and taking 4 slashing penalties in one game and then saying, you know what, we got to be disciplined out there. I don't know what the hell we're doing with discipline, but you just took 4 penalties. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You don't say it.
But emotion is a real indictment. Like, claiming that there's no emotion, that's saying you're not even showing up. There's no life. You don't care. That's effectively what he said. We don't care enough to win, and we need to start caring more. If you read between the lines, it's all one and the same. And again, saying that, representing Patrick Marleau, Ron Hainsey, John Tavares, Morgan Riley, guys who have been in the league for a long time, really good players, highly paid players like Matthews and Nylander, you're shining a light on an issue that I'm sure there's concern about it to begin with, and now you're just going to amplify it that much more. And he's going to play again in the next couple of nights because they've got a back-to-back coming up here.
Yep.
So we'll see what Garrett Sparks, you know, has in store. But listen, again, it's a classic he's not wrong but scenario. They do need to show if it's emotion, physicality, attention to detail, some life in their own end, because they get up to score goals. Yeah, they give up 23 in 4 games, but they scored a lot of goals, too. They had a 7 spot, you know. They score a lot of goals.
Oh, they can score goals.
But can you prevent it from going in your own net? And a lot of that is just simply willpower.
Yeah, you talked about it. Can they get into the grind? Because it's the playoffs, physical teams. They're going to have a grind tomorrow night, and that's their first chance to have an opportunity to respond. Because the Nashville Predators, if you don't grind against them, you'll be in trouble.
Absolutely. Well, that last week doesn't have to mean anything as long as you get back on the horse here, get back on the saddle and get rolling. You know, you got 10 games left to figure this out, to iron out some issues. You're never going to be a completely flawless team. But Tampa has some flaws. Boston has some flaws. Like, you can expose other teams' flaws, and, you know, you know what is at stake here, and you know what the issues are. You know, they were glaring prior to last week, but now they're really in your face.
Yeah, but you know what the opposition is saying about the Leafs, Brian. What do you think the game plan for them is?
Well,
make them work in their own zone.
Make them work,
and be physical and on them. Make their life miserable, and yeah, you'll have a good chance to win.
No, if it's a shinny, you're in big trouble. And that's what the Leafs are looking for. They want shinny. They want, you know, 3-on-3, no equipment.
I guarantee you that's what the opposition coaches say. You guys want to play shinny tonight? Go ahead. You'll lose 6-0.
You'll get crushed. The Leafs will crush you.
If you want to make their life miserable, you'll have a chance to win.
Yep, that's right. Well, the Raptors 0-3 against Detroit this year. Dwayne Casey, I'm sure he wasn't going to say that after the game. You know, he wasn't going to be fist pumping with the media, but that's got to be very gratifying. And here's a guy who knows him well, the former assistant coach with the Raptors and now the UCF men's basketball director of program development, to chat about the tournament, to chat about the bracket and the Raptors. And Dwayne Casey, here's Tom Stoerner. How you doing, Tom?
Guys, Brian and Jeff, how are you?
We're
doing
okay.
Real good.
We're trying to figure out what's going on here with the Raptors and the Pistons. What's your read on this? Does Dwayne Casey have some sort of, you know, secret that we're not all aware of here in how to beat the Raptors?
Well, there's a couple things going on. I mean, when you take a look at it, I think the most glaring thing is the mismanagement of the last 2 minutes of the game in each one of the three games that Toronto and Detroit have engaged in this year. And last night, or a couple nights ago, it was exactly the same thing. It's just a mismanagement of the critical time of the game. I mean, the Raptors had worked themselves back after a dismal second quarter in which the second unit, which Nick Nurse has got to be able to figure out moving into the playoffs, just totally struggled. Third quarter was fabulous in terms of watching the starters perform, move the ball, offensive spacing, defensive conversion, getting back they were terrific. And then when it got time with 2 minutes to go, as it has been in each one of these three games, it was just not managed very well from the players and the coach's standpoint.
It doesn't look like they're going to play Detroit anyway, because now the Pistons, I think, are a game and a half up on Brooklyn with three games in hand, and they're playing pretty well, and Brooklyn's got a really difficult schedule. But if it got to a point where that did happen, Raptors, Pistons, based on what you just said and what you detailed, I still think the Raptors would win the series. I think if it's Brooklyn, they win in five. I think if it's Miami, they win in five. I'm not so convinced that it would be a short series against Detroit. How would you see that playing out?
I would agree with you, and I think some of the things that you have to evaluate, first of all, you had an unlikely hero last night for Detroit, Andre Drummond. Obviously, he goes and takes a career night in terms of free throw percentage, and the Pistons do, making 24 or 27. But he also comes up with a big steal, which you would expect him to have a great block shot, but not necessarily a steal on the perimeter that would lead to an easy two buckets. But I think the matchup with Blake Griffin for the Raptors is a difficult one, especially without Ibaka. And let's be honest, they played the other night without Lowry and Ibaka. In each one of the three games, there was never a full roster for the Raptors. So I'm not trying to make an excuse here, but that's also a factor. But I think that the matchup with that, Danny Green switches late on to Blake Griffin, and they let Griffin back Danny down to get to an easy go-ahead bucket, which obviously they have to reevaluate how they play defense individually down the stretch and in games like that. But with that said, I do agree with you. I think it would be a more difficult series. I think the Raptors come out on top, but they've got to reevaluate some of the things they've been doing in late-game situations against Detroit.
Tom, how do you think Kawhi's load management is going to – do you think it's got to slow down coming into the playoffs? I mean, you know the playoffs are such a grind. How do you prep a guy that needs this load management during the regular season for that, you know, the vigors of playoff basketball?
Well, I liked what Kawhi said. You know, I listened to the interviews post game, and Kawhi said they're doing a great job of load management. So, from the perspective of the player, hearing him say that, I'm not hearing any negativity. You know, and so they're saying they're doing the right things. I would think Kawhi getting closer, because now the Raptors' schedule changes dramatically a little bit. They, you know, every one of these games is important, but they're in a position right now where two is kind of solidified, anything can certainly happen, but the separation between 2 and 3 and 4 is pretty dramatic. And now it's a 3-game separation with Milwaukee. So it's almost like you're not catching Milwaukee and you're not getting caught by Philly and Indy. So now all of a sudden you can continue to manage that load. I don't expect them to play tonight, you know, but I, you know, like one of those things is managing that load for him is critical because, as you saw with Van Fleet coming back in the game, how big he is right now. Jeremy Lin is struggling. Like they need to, you know, unfortunately the experiment with Jeremy Lin's not working real well. So with Van Fleet back and Lowry coming back, now all of a sudden you got a solidified backcourt. But the health of those two guys is critical. And the health of Kawhi Leonard is critical, especially for late-game offense. So now all of a sudden I think you can kind of manage the last, you know, 10 to 12 games with the idea that that is the key, most important premise is to make sure we're healthy going into the first round of the playoffs.
With former Raptors assistant coach Tom Stirner and now the UCF men's basketball director of program development. So the tournament, the bracket comes out last night. And to no one's surprise, Duke is a number one seed. They won the ACC tournament, did so running away yesterday. It was a great game against UNC over the weekend. And Carolina's also a number one seed. They got 3 number one seeds coming out of the ACC. But it feels like it's Duke's tournament to lose. If I offered you these two options, which one would you take, Duke or the field?
Duke or the field? I like the field. I'll be honest with you. I'm not an NC fan, but I like the players. I like White. I like Kobe White, and I like Cameron Johnson. I think North Carolina's style is similar to an NBA style. They are a fast-paced, get up and down the floor. Now, Zion coming back certainly had a great impact in that game, and what a phenomenal game that was for college basketball. But I think North Carolina's pace is very difficult to maintain. Zion is certainly very difficult to maintain as the individual player, but Duke doesn't shoot it real well from the perimeter. And teams that kind of play that different style, I think will give them some problems. On the contrast side, Carolina does shoot it pretty well. Cameron Johnson shoots it well. Kobe White, I think, like second or third in the ACC in terms of shooting it. So it's going to be an interesting tournament to say. I just don't know how much faith I put in Duke.
In terms of those two guys, Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett, I mean, there's obviously Canadian content there, so R.J. Barrett has been granted a lot of the vine up here, but even with that said, Zion Williamson and the way he's played since coming back from that knee injury has been just outstanding. I think Zion will go first overall based on he's just an athletic freak and the marketing and the branding opportunities, but in terms of what their pro careers are going to look like, who do you think has the better chance of being a better pro? Is it Zion or R.J. Barrett?
Well, I'll be honest. I think Barrett has a little more upside. I'll tell you what. I see Zion being a Blake Griffin. I see him, you know, being a guy that's an undersized power forward. And, I hate to knock college basketball, but one of the things that happens is you can get away with that In a league in which you don't have the 450 best athletes in the world. You know, Zion's extremely effective because he's a 19-year-old man who's gonna absolutely dominate college basketball. But at the same time, he's a guy who is going to get into a league of people who are just as athletic and just as skilled and just as quick as he is. And so all of a sudden, his size, I think, comes into play a little bit. And so him being Blake Griffin 6'9", 6'10", Zion 6'6". I mean, that's most two guards in our league. And so when you take a look at that, I think he'll have a phenomenal career, but I think Barrett being able to get to the rim and space the floor, and you look at the leanness of the athletes that are playing in the NBA right now, it's a much faster-paced game. And so I think Barrett has a lot of upside, and I'd be excited to have him on a roster.
Tom, quickly before we let you go, we were talking about LeBron earlier and the disaster it's turned into in L.A. this season.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the lure of joining him and that super team out in L.A. is kind of possibly going to the wayside? I know it's King LeBron James, but just dealing with that circus and where he's at right now, it might not be the big draw that he might have thought it would?
I agree with you. I think it's lost a little steam. I think the dysfunction of the team – I think the fact that they cannot put it together, granted, I think he has a lot more firepower with them in Cleveland, more veteran players. The fact that they don't have a lot of that, I think he has to grab at least two more veteran players to go along with the young guys. And that means, without getting Anthony Davis there, I don't know that they're going to be able to lure guys. It doesn't sound like the guys that are left, Durant, or these guys want to play there. You know, they want to have their own legacy. They want to be their own guy. They don't want to be in LeBron's shadow. And so because of that, I don't know who's lining up to play with LeBron. So it'll be interesting. And certainly LeBron's starting to feel his age a little bit. I'm not trying to allude to the fact that he's ineffective, but I don't know that he can do it night in and night out like he had for so many years and dominated the league just because of his willingness and his athleticism and his youth.
Great stuff as always, Tom. We appreciate the insight. We'll do it again soon.
Hey, guys. Jeff, Brian, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom Stirner. Yeah, I think, we talked about this earlier. The Lakers, they lost to the Knicks yesterday. And LeBron, his body language, his interaction or lack thereof with his teammates, it's a bad look, man. I think he's embarrassed. I think he's embarrassed to be associated with it. And, there's two ways to approach that. You can either just dig in and grind and keep trying to push and be Mr. Rah-Rah, Mr. Good Guy, Mr. Veteran, or you can take the road that he's taking and try to disassociate yourself with it all. But that doesn't look very good. Optically, that looks bad.
No, there's a few athletes that I've loved what they do for their sport that over the past couple of years, their behavior has kind of made me turned off and don't really care to watch them anymore. Beckham Jr. is one. Antonio Brown is another. And LeBron is kind of just like drinking on the sidelines while your team's playing or drinking, walking into the building and all the stuff. It just turns you off.
Yeah.
It turns you off.
I mean, to be fair to him, he is in a very unique situation. Like he's gotten to the NBA Finals 8 years in a row.
Dude, he's a god.
And now he's on one of the worst teams in the NBA that is tanking. This is foreign territory for him.
But handle yourself a certain way.
That draft lottery is going to be crazy because Zion Williamson, I think Tom hit the nail on the head. He's got a Blake Griffin vibe to him, but he's already more well-known. He can jump out of the gym more so than Blake Griffin can. And the Knicks are right there. Phoenix, Cleveland. Like, if Cleveland wins the lottery after they had LeBron for as long as they did, that would be disgusting. But whoever picks second is getting R.J. Barrett, and that dude is going to be a player.
What's more disgusting, Cleveland winning the lottery or Edmonton winning the lottery? It's got to be Edmonton. Don't even be stupid. Don't even be stupid.
I'll tell you why it's Cleveland. I'll tell you why. Because in basketball, one guy, like having LeBron, as great as McDavid's been, they don't make the playoffs. LeBron went to the NBA Finals his fourth year in the league. It's the fourth year in the league for McDavid. They're not even going to sniff the playoffs.
No.
Now, Zion Williamson is not going to have the impact that LeBron did. He's not going to be an all-time great player, I don't think. But Cleveland had it. They just won a title. Edmonton's been miserable for years. Cleveland was in the NBA final last year. The idea of them, losing LeBron, and he left, they didn't trade him or anything like that, but for them to turn right around one bad year and you win the lottery and pick the most highly touted, most marketable, most entertaining freshman to come out of college in years, that would be gutless. Gutless. But Edmonton, too, man. Like, if Edmonton wins the lottery,
be something else.
That would be equally as gutless or real close to it. Bianca Andreescu is now, I don't know if she's a household name, but she's close. You win a big title.
You're a household name when you win that title.
Especially in a sport like tennis, where it doesn't get a ton of vine. You really, as a Canadian, you got to go deep into a tournament. You got to go deep into a tournament, or one of the legends has to pump your tires. McEnroe's got to go on TV and say, this is the next great. Then we pay attention to it. But winning at Indian Hills at 18 years old.
Indian Wells.
Buddy. Indian Wells. I've said that a couple of times. Indian Wells, that's gonna put you on a map. So we'll get into that, the significance of this.
We still got to play some Randy Jackson. That's a no dog for the nudist camps.
Yeah, there's a lot of people texting and tweeting in with details.
We'll get to that next.
We'll skim through a few of those as well. Get you more details on the nudist colonies and the beaches and what the protocol is, basically. The O-Dog's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. The most significant win in Canadian tennis history. That's what people are claiming. You know, I thought it was Shapovalov beating Nadal a couple of years ago at the Rogers Cup, but that was just an individual match. This should be considered that. When a Canadian wins a big title, it never happens. You know, Raonic has had some big wins throughout his career. Jeannie Bouchard had some big wins. But a title, you know, that separates you from the pack pretty quickly. So we will get into that in just a moment. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. The O-Dog is back from vacation, loving his resort down in Mexico, meeting friends, lots of friends.
Yeah,
you guys have like
friends.
A group chat going on? Or
we haven't got the group chat fired up yet, but it was a great time. Met a bunch of people to hang out. That's what I like about vacation. You meet new people, and there is a group of eight of us.
So do you think you guys will stay,
and the crew.
You guys will stay connected, you think, or will this wear off in like a week?
Yeah.
I mean, hope it does. That'd be great. But
I mean, I know that Jumi stays in touch with the lady, the wife, and I've talked to the husband. They got married. We were in the wedding party.
No, I know that. But I feel like you guys are still running on, like, there's a honeymoon stage here.
Oh, you think after a while it's like, I don't want to be dealing with those people?
I don't know. I mean, how much, because you know
what
I'm saying?
The thing is, we all plan to go back next year.
Right.
And do it again.
Which, that would be cool.
Yeah.
That would be great.
What happens if it's just like something's different and you're like, maybe you're a jerk?
Well, you know what? I think it would work for you guys if you are in the same spot every time you see each other. Because you're all in the same frame of mind. I think where you might have a problem.
Say, let's meet in Nashville for a weekend.
Hey, let's go do something different. Yeah, exactly. Or, hey, you're coming up to Toronto for the week? Come, you know, stay at the house. And then you're like, oh, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing
catch
when you're
somebody doing something creepy.
Well, or, you know, it's in your house as opposed to at the resort. Yeah. You know what I mean? You got work. It's like, dude, I got to go. I can't sit in here and have beers with you. I got to go. Got to go to work.
Yeah.
You know, we're all inclusive on the road. If you're away for a week, man, that just it change. You're always relaxed. You're in a good mood. You got no schedule. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's happening anyway because we check with the March breaks next year, and they don't align up with the state. So it's probably already out.
What do you mean?
Theirs is different next year, and we already checked.
Well, why do they need to go on the American one?
Because they're
teachers?
American.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like, who can go away whenever you want?
Because they all have kids, so they go away with the kids are off school. They get babysitters. And they leave without their kids.
Well, why would it make a difference, though?
I don't know, dude. I'm just telling you the information I know. It's like, we looked, and I'm like...
I know that, but I'm challenging...
We're all fired up. Yeah, we're doing it again next year. Then we got home. Our March break's different than theirs. Not happening.
So, but March break for adults, I don't think, should apply. You know what I'm saying? Like,
who cares? You're basically taking a week off work anyway.
You're not bringing your kids anyway. What does it matter?
Yeah. Yeah,
you're right. You know, like, I know you go away during March break. You don't have to. I mean, I guess you do in your circumstance because... You know, of your fiance's profession, but you know, like you could go away this week and have worked last week. Like, it makes no difference.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I'm saying? Anyway, so Bianca Andreescu, you need to learn to pronounce her name. You need to recognize her name because she put herself on the map, and she won down at Indian Wells. We're going to catch up with Steve Weissman here in a moment. 18 years old. 18, and three more slams. She said all the right things. She seems like she's like really, obviously she's motivated. There was great audio of her and her coach where she was dealing, I think she was cramping up a little bit. Her feet were really starting to bother her. And, you know, her coach came down to the court side and started talking to her and basically gave her a pep talk and said, you got to fight through it. You can't pull the chute. You got to go out there and win.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I want it so badly, and she went out there, and she turned the whole match around in the third set and found a way to win. But especially with individual sportsmen, you can't rely on a teammate. You can't rely on a great quarterback or a great goalie. You got to go out there and do it yourself. If you're not feeling it that day, that's what makes, like, these great, great players like Serena Williams and Federer and Nadal. It's like they never have off days.
Yeah. How many days do they actually feel like garbage, but they just grind it out?
I would guess a lot. They're human. There's got to be a lot of days where they're like, I feel like garbage.
They're like Tiger Woods, though. His B game in his prime is better than everybody else's A game.
Because maybe mentally the A game is still there, but physically you feel like a B or C, but you got to fight through it, right? But it was obviously big news up here. The whole country was tracking it, and it's being labeled the greatest Canadian tennis accomplishment of all time. And we'll see what Bianca can do from here and where she can take this. And to add some context to it, we're joined now by Steve Weissman from the Tennis Channel, who was down at Indian Wells. Thank you for doing this, Steve.
Yeah, my pleasure. Glad to join y'all.
So absolutely.
This is the greatest tennis accomplishment in the history. So this is bigger than like Raonic getting to a major final?
Well, I think because winning just doesn't happen. You know, like you're right. Raonic has won. Shapovalov beat Nadal in Toronto last year or two years ago. That was a massive win. Jeannie Bouchard's been in Grand Slam finals. But it's one thing to we've had this as Canadian tennis fans or tennis supporters. You know, they've won big matches, so to speak, but actually winning a title separates you from everybody else. I'm not saying this is a science, but it's being deemed that way by some people.
I think that's awesome. I mean, having spent the week at Indian Wells and spending some time with Bianca, I mean, she's just a dynamic personality. And obviously you saw on the court how much of a fighter she is, you know, during that coaching timeout sort of at the end of the match against Kerber, where she was like, you know, my feet are on fire. I can barely move, but then she was like, I just want this so bad. And that really struck me as, you know, something that you don't hear a lot from a player on the court. And she took it, you know.
Steve, if you were handling Bianca's career, how would you deal with things moving forward? Obviously, the win changes everything. Your profile is heightened. How do you manage it so that she stays focused and stays competitive and things don't get out of hand, the fame doesn't get to her? How would you proceed going forward?
I mean, it sounds like she has a great base with her parents and her coach and Tennis Canada. She's only 18 years old, and she seems pretty grounded. I took her around for some suite visits throughout the tournament. We were in the BNP Paribas suite. We were in the Oracle suite, and she was so charming with, you know, all of the guests and just very down to earth and honest. And you don't always find that, you know, with players. Obviously, this is the first time that she's really experienced all of this, but she's won so much this year. And it started, you know, like she said, last year. I mean, she won her last tournament last year at 25K in Norman, Oklahoma. She's playing events in Japan and, you know, was kind of down and out, but winning begets winning. And, you know, when she was in Auckland this year and beat Caroline Wozniacki, she told me that the win against Venus Williams was the biggest moment of her life and the biggest win of her career when she beat her in Auckland. And then she goes to Newport and she told me that she was actually, she looks up to Milos Raonic. She looked up to Jeannie Bouchard. She looked up to Simona Halep. She beat Jeannie Bouchard in Newport this year, 6-2, 6-love. I mean, she crushed her. So that tells you, you know, that gave her a ton of confidence that, okay, this Canadian that I've always looked up to got to the finals of Wimbledon. I just beat her in an hour. And so now she comes to Indian Wells with all this confidence, more, you know, wins than anyone else in the women's game this year. Beats Garbiñe Muguruza, love and one. I mean, this is a two-time Grand Slam champion. And she says she likes to play her game. She calls her game a junk game, because, you know, she can kind of slice it, she can hit hard, she can do everything. But man, what a clean performance. I would just keep things going the way they are right now. I just want her to stay healthy. That's the biggest thing for a young tennis player. I don't think things are going to get to her head in terms of, you know, the fame or anything like that. She seems pretty grounded, but as long as she stays healthy, because obviously at the end of this tournament, she's played so many matches this year. You just need to manage that schedule while also allowing her to experience what it's like to be a top 25 player. I mean, at the beginning of this year, she's ranked 152 in the world. She's having to qualify for a lot of these events and play lower levels. Now she gets direct entry into all of the major events throughout the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So you want to play those, you want to have those experiences, kind of ride the momentum, but you also want to beware of your body and that you're not overusing it at, you know, 18 years old.
With Steve Weissman of the Tennis Channel. So with all that being said, with what you said about her game, her intensity, the fact that she's a fighter, and now that she's a top 25 player in the world, automatic entry into the French, Wimbledon, U.S. Open, how would you handicap her chances, not necessarily of winning any of the Grand Slams, but at least performing well and getting deeper into the bracket?
I don't see why not, you know. Although the women's game this year, as well as the men's game, has been extremely, there's been a ton of parity. So there's been 13 events on the women's side. There's been 13 different winners. There's been 19 events on the men's side. There's been 19 different winners. So will that continue? Probably. Could she win more events? Absolutely. You know, like I said, she's won more matches this year than anyone else. She had won that Newport Challenger. She got to the semifinals the week before Indian Wells. And her game, to me, suits all those styles. I think she plays well in the clay. I think she can play well in the grass with her slice shots. And obviously, we saw what she could do on a hard court. So also, last year, remember Naomi Osaka, she had never won a title before Indian Wells. What has she done since then? Well, she's won the U.S. Open, she's won the Australian Open, and she's the number one player in the world. She also, you know, lost early on at Indian Wells, and that's going to happen. Sloane Stephens, same thing. You know, she's won the U.S. Open, gets to the finals of the French Open, loses first round of the Australian Open. So consistency is not really what I've seen a lot on the WTA, but the way that Bianca fights on the court makes me think that she can make quarters, make semis, as long as she stays healthy. The other thing is, you know, players haven't seen her before, right? So the second time around is always going to be a little tougher for her. Somebody that has a scouting report that's been there, that's seen what she does, you know, they'll maybe have a better chance at playing against her. But I like her chances the rest of the year.
Really appreciate the insight, Steve. Enjoy the rest of the season. We'll do it again down the road.
All right, thanks so much.
There's Steve Weissman of the Tennis Channel. So there you have it, man. There's a lot of people that were pretty fired up. A lot of diehard tennis fans that would have been following, you know, Bianca and all the Canadian tennis players on both the men's and the women's side of things. But once you get to the slams, you start getting, like, the average sports fan paying attention.
Yeah.
And
you get the average sports fan watching tennis if she's in a big match at a major.
It'll absolutely happen. Yeah.
Like, I do the same thing. I'm not a tennis guy, but when Raonic was making some runs.
Yep. Shapovalov, when Bouchard was having that magical year back in 2015, I think it was.
I think she, what did she get, to the semifinals of Wimbledon?
She got to the finals of Wimbledon, semis of the Aussie, I think semis of French, or she went deep in the French Open as well, and she performed okay at the U.S. Open. I might have that mixed up, but it was must-see TV. You had to watch it.
Yep.
Like, regardless of what time it was, you're like, I got to see Jeannie Bouchard. She was smashing ratings records. And, you know, a year prior to that, outside of the diehards, no one really knew who she was. And it's the same thing with Bianca here. No one knew who she was 6 months ago. She's 18 years old. She was, you know, a wild card for a lot of tournaments. She had to qualify to even get into the bracket. Now she's 24th in the world. That's how quickly she skyrocketed here. And I like her attitude, her whole vibe. Like, yeah, she
seems like a real nice kid.
And let's get after it, you know? Like he said, Steve just said, she's a fighter. She wants to go out there and fight. I love it. So we'll see what she's got when the slams continue at the French Open. We'll get back into the Leafs next. The Raptors are in action tonight. Kyle Lowry will play. Kawhi will not play. Load management. And I was kind of cavalier with this earlier. I said they probably don't need him against the Knicks, and people pointed this out. The last time I said that was last week against Cleveland, and the Cavs smoked them. I said, they don't even need Kawhi. They're going to crush this team. They're brutal. They lost by like 25. Yeah, they got crushed. The Knicks are coming off a win, too. They beat the Lakers. They're feeling it. Feeling good on a Monday night down at Scotiabank. So we'll tee that up, get to our best bets, brought to you by ProLine. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. UFC. There's a UFC every weekend now, which, you know, that speaks to how big it's become. But it's difficult to track if you're not, like, ensconced in the industry and you're on top of it. There's all these different weight classes and all these different fighters, and there's a million ranks. And
I've only watched ever Conor McDavid. That's it.
McGregor.
No, sorry, yeah. Conor McGregor.
That's that's not true. I mean, I've been to multiple UFC fights in Toronto. John Jones, I've seen him live.
There's an element to it that grosses me out. Like, I think it was this weekend, somebody knocked a guy, and the punches after the guy's knocked out.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Well, that's how they're trained, right?
No
until
kidding.
The ref can jump in there, you gotta try to kill, basically. You gotta keep going, because if you stop and the guy gets up, you're in big trouble. But you're right, it's gruesome. Like, it is. It is a gruesome sport. But they're all big boys and all big girls, and they
choose to do it.
They want to get in on it, and they do it, right? And there is a guy by the name of Jorge Masvidal. And he won his fight over the weekend. He was one of those guys who knocked out his opponent, and it was pretty ugly. And I guess
it might have been him I'm talking about.
I think it was him, actually. And during his post-game like scrum.
Didn't he go punch somebody else out in the face?
Yes, there was another scrum going on around the corner. Leon Edwards, who's another fighter in his
weight class. Yeah, he went out and punched him in the face.
Yeah, basically. You want to hear do you want to hear his explanation? Because the video is great. He's sitting there. He's doing a one-on-one, I think, with ESPN, explaining what happened in his fight. And Leon Edwards is around the corner kind of chirping him, saying, hey, you're next. In July, I'm going to come get you. And then this Jorge character goes over to him and just starts throwing. And then he was asked about that story like an hour later. Can you explain what went down? And listen to how cool, calm, and collected this guy is. Like, this is a fighter who would fight at any time, anywhere, against anybody. Listen to this audio.
So I'm doing my interview. This hooligan comes by saying some stuff. And July, get your ass kicked. July. And I go, maybe, bro, whatever. Because maybe I want to kick your ass in April. Maybe I don't want to wait till July. Maybe I don't even want to fight you in a prize ring because you're not worth a training camp. I'll just fight you here because you're a scrub, you know? So I tell him, just say it to my face. Like, man, you're saying it, walking away. That's not like, we're both men, you know? And as I'm walking up to him, I got my hands behind my back to signal I'm not coming here for problems. But he put his hands up like this, it's on video, and he walks towards me. Well, where I'm from, if you do that, you're going to punch me in the face, and that's not going to happen, Leon. You're a dork, you're JV beta, you are what you are, bro. You're just a loser in life, man. You're not going to get a hit off me, you know. So I had to give him the three-piece with the soda. And then just glide out of there, you know. And then some of his friends tried to sucker punch me. Those guys did a big mistake.
Three-piece with a soda.
What's that mean?
That means I hit him three times and then bounced. I hit him with the three-piece with a soda.
Give him the three-piece with the soda.
I need that, man. Yeah. That's got to be somewhere
That's
on my
staying
avatar.
In our itinerary yeah. forever.
If you lay a beating on some guy, you hit him with a three-piece with a soda.
Give him the three-piece with the soda.
I'll take the three-piece with a soda.
That's casually saying, I punched a guy in the face three times as hard as I can and bounced.
Yeah, and I'm out of here. And there's nothing you can do. And I love how he just undresses this guy's character. Like, maybe I'll fight you in May. Maybe I won't even waste a fight on you. You're a loser. Like, that's the game in the UFC. You can't come out and be overly respectful. You know, George St. Pierre was as close to that as possible. He didn't really take the bait. Habib doesn't really take the bait, although he did after the McGregor fight. But at some point, you just got to be all bravado. You know, you got to throw chirps out there. That's the game.
You
That's the fight game.
You got to throw the three-piece with the soda.
Yeah, basically. Do we have any Randy Jackson here, Graps? Because, you know, we were talking about going to nude beaches or nude resorts. And you brought up what I think is a very important question to ask. What's the eating situation? And Al was on top of this. Al's going to have to delete his Google history when he leaves the room. I guess they eat in the nude. They. These are human beings we're talking about, but it feels like a completely different species. But you're expected, and the rules are you bring a towel with you wherever you go.
To sit on?
Yes. So if you're going to sit at like a bar stool, you put the towel down and you're just kind of cruising around, man. Like you never put on clothes, ever. Maybe flip-flops, like just for sanitary purposes, if you're in a washroom or whatever. But I guess if you're at a nude beach or a nude resort for a week, the gear comes off the second you walk in and it does not go back on until the second you leave.
That is insane.
This is not your thing, dog.
That's what Randy would be saying. I have no interest in ever doing that. No. None.
If you and I ever had to gear down in front of a panel to see if we can go into the nudist column.
This is not your thing, dog.
You are built like a caribou.
Yeah.
This is not your thing, dog. You are a sloth. We don't want your types. They would full-blown like bigotry against my type. My build, so to speak. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by Proline.
I'd get the no guy, too. Tapman, no guy.
Tapman, no guy. I'm on Chicago tonight and the over in the Chicago-Vancouver game. Chicago's winning a lot of games. Like, I don't think they're going to be able to find a spot in the playoffs, but they're winning a lot of games. They score a lot of goals. They don't defend well. I'm on Chicago in the over, and I will take Winnipeg in L.A. tonight. Throw down 20. You can score 60. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. All right, so Noodles was off today, but he'll be back tomorrow. The Leafs are in Nashville tomorrow night, and I'm sure Noodles will have comments on Garrett Sparks, the role of a backup. We'll start teeing that game up tomorrow night. You got the Raptors taking on the Knicks tonight. Kyle Lowry will play. Kawhi Leonard will not play. But Fred VanVleet is back. It's all good. It's all good. You happen to be home or what? Are you doing TV tonight or what?
I've got That's Hockey full sked right off the bat.
Yeah, we were supposed to do our Source commercial, but that got canceled.
Because of Noodles.
What would we have done if you were doing That's Hockey?
I don't know. I just know my own schedule. I got the Leaf game tomorrow night. But I'm glad to be back, man. Week off always does good.
Yeah, see, you're the opposite of me. You come in,
you're
feel
awful
good.
After a vacation.
I'm horrible.
I've never understood that. How are you not refreshed?
It's that I think I'm overly refreshed. Like, my mind just completely shuts down for a week. That it takes a while. It's like an engine, man. I got to get it going again. Does that make sense?
It's supposed to be the opposite. You're supposed to come in here guns blazing.
Yep, you would think.
Hot takes all over the place.
All right. Well, anyway, we're back tomorrow. We'll be teeing up the Leaf game. We'll look back on the Raptors game. We'll get back into the Blue Jays saying no guy on video games an hour before first pitch.
That's crazy.
Whole new world in the baseball game, man.
An hour before first pitch.
Hour before, guys, the video games have to go off. Seems reasonable for professional athletes making millions of dollars. There'll be a fight. Someone will miss a game this year, I guarantee it.
So that's the deal? If you get caught playing video games, you're not playing?
No, I don't know what the rule is. It should be. If you have a rule, there should be a penalty if you break it. But if the penalty is, if we catch you, you know, beyond an hour, you're missing that game, I guarantee it will happen at least once.
No, I say no.
I guarantee
you don't want to be that guy. Mm-hmm. Playing video games and you're caught playing, that's like after hours.
Yeah, I'm telling
you.
Who
wants to be that guy?
This is not your thing, dog.
No, not your thing.
All right, man. Good seeing you. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.